Today is Tuesday, March 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump says the U.S. could be open for business in weeks, not months.
America will again and soon be open for business. Very soon.
Britain's prime minister bans gatherings of more than two people. We'll have the latest on the coronavirus pandemic, which has infected more than 375,000 people worldwide. It's all on today's International Edition. Washington is straining to respond to the worsening coronavirus outbreak. Tempers flared on Monday in Congress as lawmakers argued over a nearly $2 trillion economic rescue package. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, as he opened the chamber after a nonstop weekend session that failed to produce a deal.
This has got to stop. And today's the day it has to stop. The country's out of time.
Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen said Democrats are trying to negotiate more help for workers who've lost their jobs and that McConnell should have waited until there was an agreement before forcing a vote on the massive spending package.
He chose to hold that vote knowing it would fail. That is a self-inflicted wound on the United States Senate and on the American people at this moment.
For more on when Americans might see some relief, we are joined by VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. What is the latest that you can tell us about where things stand as far as this rescue package that doesn't seem to be getting agreement from both sides of the aisle in Congress?
That's right. So basically what's been happening this entire weekend is that negotiations are ongoing between congressional Democrats and Republicans over this bill that's ballooning to almost $1.8 trillion, which when it's passed would be the biggest stimulus bill that the U.S. Congress has ever passed. The main point of disagreement is a $500 billion fund for corporations that are particularly hard hit by this crisis. Congressional Democrats are calling it a slush fund because they feel that there aren't enough controls on it to manage how the corporations use that taxpayer money. They think that they can push Republicans into removing that or putting some more protections on it. That's most likely what's causing these negotiations.
What about ordinary Americans? Does it do anything to help them?
It absolutely does. So the idea is that every American below a certain income level would receive a one or two time direct cash payment directly into their bank account to use however they wish. That way they go out and they start spending that money, injecting it back into the U.S. economy to help all of these struggling small businesses and restaurants, everything that's been shut down because of the social distancing measures because of the coronavirus. Now, obviously, there's some negotiation back and forth about what income levels should get it. Right now, the numbers I'm seeing are that everybody below $75,000 a year is going to get about $1,000 in a cash payment right off the bat sometime in early April.
Why wouldn't Republicans want to put in a stipulation that the corporations have to spend it on their people and not just expanding their own pockets?
Well, we had a little bit of an ugly day on the U.S. Senate floor because of that. Really an unusual day in terms of the way members of Congress were interacting each other. It was actually a lot of yelling. There was a lot of back and forth and fighting over the procedure of just getting advancing debate on this thing. They're arguing about just advancing the bill. They're not even arguing about it, the bill itself, which is not really a great sign for getting this done anytime soon. So what they were doing was kind of talking past each other. Republicans, Mitch McConnell was saying that this had to move, that Democrats were politicizing it, that they were looking for a, quote, juicy political opportunity to pack in all of their favorite issues. Democrats came back and said, look, if you're going to give $500 billion to corporations who, we admit, this is no fault of their own that they're suffering, but they also need to have some sort of responsibility to the American taxpayer. Mm. A lot of the discussion has been that the airlines, which are extremely hard hit by all of this, had liquidity in their funds. They had a lot of extra money, but but then they use that extra money for stock buybacks to enhance their CEO's compensation. They're saying we have to make sure that the airlines and other industries don't do this with that taxpayer money.
So they're really still in a debating mode, and they're nowhere near an actual vote, and this is not likely to get done anytime soon while the economy in this country is at a standstill?
That's pretty much where we stand right now. They're still negotiating now up on Capitol Hill. Once they finally reach a decision, then Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer will release those Democratic votes and allow his members to say, yes, we want this discussion to go on. Because of the way Senate rules work, that means that even if they do that now, they would still have a couple of days until they could have the actual vote on the legislation, bringing us to at least Friday or Saturday of this week.
How is it that Democrats are able to have leverage right now?
Well, that's a great question because, of course, they almost never have any leverage. The Republicans do control the majority in the Senate. Mitch McConnell usually can get through what he wants, but he had a monkey wrench thrown into those plans, and it was because of coronavirus. So Senator Rand Paul became the first U.S. senator to test positive for coronavirus over the weekend. We know, of course, that two members of the U.S. House of Representatives have already tested positive. Senator Paul announced that and said that, of course, he would have to self-isolate during that 14-day period. He also came into contact with two other members of the U.S. Senate, Mitt Romney and Mike Lee, who now say that they are self-isolating because they were in contact with Senator Paul. So that cuts down into Mitch McConnell's number of votes.
That's VOA congressional correspondent Katherine Gibson. Meanwhile, even as federal officials warn the coronavirus crisis is deepening, President Trump is expressing qualms about extending the federal government's recommendation that Americans stay home for 15 days. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
2 days ago, the president said Americans need to stay away from each other to stop the spread.
I think it's going to have a very profound effect.
Last night, he tweeted in all caps, "We cannot let the cure be worse than the problem itself." That contradicts medical advice from around the country, continuing what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says is a habit of speaking with no regard for science. Just this morning, Surgeon General Jerome Adams warned things are going to get a lot worse in America this week. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The COVID-19 illness causes mild or moderate symptoms in most people, but severe symptoms are likely in the elderly or those with existing health problems. More than 100,000 people have recovered so far, mostly in China. Meanwhile, Attorney General William Barr, speaking at Monday's coronavirus task force update alongside the president, said the Justice Department will go after people hoarding vital emergency supplies and raising prices. He said he is not aiming to go after people stashing toilet paper in their homes.
If you have a big supply of toilet paper in your house, this is not something you have to worry about. But if you are sitting on a warehouse with masks, surgical masks, you will be hearing a knock on your door.
There has been a major rise in complaints of price gouging on high-demand products like face masks and hand sanitizer. U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper briefed the media Monday on the Pentagon and Defense Department's response to the pandemic. Joining us is national security correspondent Jeff Selden. Jeff, what exactly did the defense secretary say about what his department is doing to assist in the crisis?
A couple of things. He said that first that the military is working on sending some field hospitals to both New York and Seattle, some of the hardest hit areas of the country when it comes to coronavirus. He also said that Department of Defense and DOD laboratories were available and willing to help with testing for coronavirus. He said that there are 16 labs available. They 6,000 tests a day on coronavirus. Said the problem is the test kits, those running behind, so that's holding things back. And finally, he said that they are taking some additional precautions at the Pentagon itself, that they're raising alert status there, and that they may start doing things like testing when people come into the Pentagon. They've already reduced the work staff by about 60% there, but they may start taking temperatures and instituting other measures to make sure that coronavirus is not spreading.
Why are they just sending these hospitals now? I thought that this was already in works.
There are a couple of things that the Pentagon is doing. It's not just the field hospitals that they're sending specifically to Seattle and New York right now, pending approval from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. They're also sending a couple of hospital ships to Los Angeles and also to New York. The USNS Mercy is heading to Los Angeles. The USNS Comfort is heading to New York. So they're taking those measures as well. Additionally, there are more than 7,000 National Guardsmen who have been activated to help out in cities across the U.S., doing basic things like helping with drive-through testing for coronavirus, helping stock shelves at grocery stores to make sure people, when they need to go shopping, those that are not on complete lockdown, are able to get some stuff. And so the Pentagon's doing a variety of things. At the same time, though, of course, the main purpose of the Defense Department is to protect the country. And while it's cut back on some major military exercises, training goes on. And the secretary said that he's confident that U.S. forces are ready should they be needed.
That's VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden. Well, as the number of cases continue to rise, experts say the United States is on the path to surpassing Italy. Joining us now to talk about what the U.S. can expect in the coming weeks is Dr. Rachel Bender-Ignacio, an infectious disease specialist at the University of Washington in Seattle. I imagine this is truly going to get worse before it gets better.
As testing increases and infections spread, we are absolutely bound to see more cases. We will have a several week lag before we know whether social distancing has been effective in any particular area. And again, because this has really been done at the local jurisdiction level, cities and counties and states individually rather than at the federal level.
What about the thousands of cases that they are expecting in hospitals are going to far surpass their capability, particularly with ICU?
I think that's very clear to all of us who are in healthcare and looking at the numbers and the expectations. What we know about the United States healthcare system is that we run at capacity, both for acute care beds and critical care beds most of the time and in most regions. And so it's really taking a concerted effort to attempt to remove all strain on the healthcare system that's not necessary right now, delaying elective procedures, trying to discharge patients from the hospital that are there for reasons other than for needing acute medical care. But I think even with all of that, we know that we are going to be short and short of healthcare workers, critical care beds, and specifically ventilators.
Are we behind the curve here as far as being prepared for this? And should we have stepped up sooner to get testing? And how much is that stifling the situation?
It is clear that preparedness could have helped us substantially, that there are some things that, for example, here in Seattle, we've had a tremendous move to be prepared even before we knew that we had community transmission here. Part of that is because we had the index case that came as a traveler back in January. And part of that is because the University of Washington, working together with our King County Public Health and our State Department of Health, are incredibly experienced and incredibly prepared and forward thinking. So we have done our best at the local, state, and county level to be prepared as best as we can. The most difficult thing here is that that has not been the case throughout the country and is highly variable how much each jurisdiction has been prepared until a national emergency was declared.
Why is this virus in particular so incredibly infectious? You can get it just by being around people?
So we know that this is a respiratory virus that acts in many ways the same as most respiratory viruses like influenza, but there are several things that make it more infectious. We don't entirely understand completely why it's more infectious or why it even seems to be more infectious than the original SARS coronavirus. But one thing that certainly is impacting us here is that no one in the population has previous immunity to this. So unlike influenza, where even though the necessary immunity and the perfect match between a vaccine and the virus changes year to year as the virus becomes different from season to season, our populations all over the world are completely not immune to this. And additionally, it is seems to be having a much longer life on hard surfaces than even the preceding SARS virus or influenza, for example. So it seems as though it's just able to stay on surfaces and transmit very effectively by respiratory droplets between people who are in close contact.
Are we building any immunity right now if we are carriers but not getting sick, or is it way too soon to even think about that?
I think this is a huge area of emerging science, emerging study. So the term carrier, I think, is a little bit tricky. The way that we define an infection is by detecting genetic material from the virus inside somebody's nasopharynx. So that's the swab testing that's happening. And what we think from the data coming from China is that about 75% of people, at least, who are carrying the virus will ultimately develop some sort of symptoms, even if they're very mild. So we don't think that there's a tremendous number of people who will never display some degree of symptoms, but more that most people who are carrying the virus are about to become sick or are just recovering from being sick. It's a very hot area of ongoing research to try to understand to what extent people who have recovered from illness or who have recovered from having the virus detected in their nose without significant illness, to understand whether those people are protected and for what duration they're protected from a second infection.
We've been hearing from government health officials that this could be around for 18 months. Do you agree with that? That's a long time.
I do agree with that. I think that our best modeling experts expect that we will have a surge of this virus for the next several months, likely until the warm season when there tends to be fewer respiratory infections. We are hypothesizing that it will decrease during the summer months here, although we don't know if this virus behaves the same as influenza where that's true. But we do expect that there will be a decrease due to social distancing and potentially the summer season. But we fully expect that there will be another uptick again in the fall and through next winter until either a sufficient proportion of the country or the world has immunity against this virus through natural infection or through a vaccination that's successful.
Dr. Rachel Bender Ignacio, infectious disease specialist at the University of Washington in Seattle. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa announced a 21-day nationwide lockdown Monday to try to curb the rapid spread of the coronavirus in South Africa. The order comes a day after cases rose dramatically. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on Monday announced a 21-day shutdown to try to curb the rapid spread of coronavirus in South Africa, the day after cases rose drastically. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg. It's official. As of midnight Thursday, the Rainbow Nation is on lockdown. All businesses other than clinics, pharmacies, and food stores will close for 21 days. All residents must stay home except for essential staff. President Cyril Ramaphosa announcing the measure on live television Monday night.
The National Coronavirus Command Council has decided to enforce a nationwide lockdown for 21 days with effect from midnight on Thursday, the 26th of March. This is a decisive measure to save lives of South Africans from infection and save the lives of hundreds of thousands of our people. While this measure will have a considerable impact on people's livelihoods, on the life of our society and on our economy, the human cost of delaying this action would be far, far greater. The nationwide lockdown will be enacted in terms of the Disaster Management Act and will entail the following. From midnight on Thursday, 26th March, until midnight Thursday, the 16th of April, all South Africans will have to stay at home.
He made the announcement on the day that the number of coronavirus cases in South Africa jumped to 402, the highest caseload in sub-Saharan Africa, and an overnight increase of 128 cases. That caseload, however, will look paltry if the virus goes unchecked. He estimated that hundreds of thousands of South Africans could be infected, which is more than the nation's overburdened health system can easily support. Also, he noted, the nation has the world's highest burden of HIV, meaning millions of South Africans are already prone to opportunistic illness. The move echoes other African nations' steps to try to stop the spread of the virus. Rwanda was the first African nation to announce a lockdown, issuing the order for a two-week lockdown on Saturday. And on Monday, the Democratic Republic of Congo's second-largest city began a 48-hour lockdown. Ramaphosa also announced a number of measures to try to keep small businesses and informal workers afloat in the continent's most advanced economy. And finally, speaking grimly off the teleprompter, he assured the nation that they will overcome this challenge.
In the days, weeks, and months ahead, our resolve, our resourcefulness, and our unity as a nation is going to be put to a test as never before. I call on all of us, one and all, to play our part and our role as South Africans, to be courageous, to be patient, and above all, to show solidarity and compassion to one another. Let us never despair despite the challenges that our country is facing now. For we are a nation of one, and we are surely going to prevail. May God protect our people. Nkosi sikelela iAfrika. Morena, boluka sechaba sa Jesu.
His final words are lyrics from the multilingual national anthem. In the Xhosa and Sesotho languages, it means, God bless Africa. Lord, we ask you to protect our nation. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Typically busy streets around the world look like scenes from post-apocalyptic movies. The coronavirus pandemic has left most people at home while authorities take advantage to wage war on the virus one block at a time. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has that story.
In Bangkok, the streets are deserted except for military trucks and workers in hazmat suits. This new normal in the Thai capital and other major world cities comes as social distancing keeps most people at home and clears the way for crews to disinfect the streets where known cases once thrived.
Of the group that was recently discovered beginning on March 14th, 57 cases alone were connected to a nightclub and a boxing arena. They included organizers, hosts, and an audience filled with family members and close contacts.
Infections in Thailand jumped to more than 700 on Monday, according to press reports, with one death. In Kenya's capital, reduced street traffic gives health workers the opportunity to wage war on many pathogens with disinfectants.
This sanitation exercise will be of great help. We are targeting all kinds of germs, not just corona. We are using chlorine, which we'll also use to effectively kill germs.
Workers from the health ministry sanitized public transportation in Nairobi and installed sinks for convenient hand washing. Nineveh, an Iraqi city on the outskirts of Mosul, had zero confirmed cases last week, but street sanitizing continues. Iraq has at least 230 reported cases and 20 people have died. In Syria, the White Helmets, a group known for search and rescue operations, now has a new mission.
The team is tasked with sanitizing the public areas, mosques, schools, churches, and halls people frequent. We also offer advice to help people face the virus.
The war-torn country confirmed its first case of coronavirus Sunday. India, home to more than 1.3 billion people, reported 415 cases and 7 deaths, but health experts warn a spike in coronavirus cases may overwhelm public health infrastructure. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And finally today, musicians are talking about coming together to reprise an iconic song that has helped the world heal in other previous crises.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We could go on pretending day by someone, somewhere we'll soon make a change.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of our director and engineer, Jackson Munganye, I'm Lori London in Washington. Please take care of yourself and be well.
This is VOA News.